Chapter 63. The Prince of Orange, Count Alten, von Umtiede, Baring, Duplet, and other officers of the King's German Legion, Perpenscher, Best, Kolmansegg, Wink, and other Hanoverian officers, Beilen and other officers of the Dutch-Belgian troops, some hussars, King's German, Hanoverian, Brunswick, and Dutch-Belgian forces. Baron van Capellen, Belgian Secretary of State, the Dukes of Arenberg and Dursel, the Mayor of Brussels, citizens and idlers of Brussels. Napoleon Bonaparte, Joseph Bonaparte, Jerome Bonaparte, the King of Rome, Eugene de Beauharnais, Cambaciers, Arch-Chancellor to Napoleon, Talleyrand, Collingert, de Bossuet, Murat, King of Naples, Soult, Napoleon's Chief of Staff, Ney, Davout, Marmont, Berthier, Bertrand, Bessiers, Augereau, MacDonald, Lauriston, Cambron, Audinet, Friant, Riel, Derlon, Drouet, Victor, Poniatowski, Jourdan, and other marshals, and general and regimental officers of Napoleon's army, Rapp, Mortier, Lariboisiere, Kellerman and Milhaud, Colonels Fabrier, Marbot, Mallet, Hames, and others, French aides and couriers, the Canisi, equerry to the King of Rome, Commandant Lessard, another commandant, Bussy, an orderly officer, soldiers of the Imperial Guard and others, stragglers, a mad soldier, French forces, Hurot, Berdois, and Ivan, physicians, Menival, private secretary to Napoleon, de Montrand, an emissary of Napoleon's, other secretaries to Napoleon, Constant, Napoleon's valet, Rouston, Napoleon's mameluke, two postillions, a traveler, chamberlains and attendants, servants at the Tuileries, French citizens and townspeople, the King of Prussia, Blücher, Muffling, Wellington's Prussian attaché, Neissene, Zieten, Bülow, Kleist, Steinmetz, Thielemann, Falkenhausen, other Prussian general and regimental officers, a Prussian prisoner of the French, Prussian forces, Francis, Emperor of Austria, Metternich, Chancellor and Foreign Minister, Hardenberg, Niepert-Schwarzenberg, Kleine, Hess-Homburg, and other Austrian generals, Viennese personages of rank and fashion, Austrian forces, the Emperor Alexander of Russia, Nesselrode, Kutuzov, Bennigsen, Barclay de Tolly, Doctorov, Bagration, Platov, Chichagov, Miloradovich, and other Russian generals, Rostopchin, Governor of Moscow, Shuvalov, a commissioner, a Russian officer under Kutuzov, Russian forces, Moscow citizens, Alava, Wellington's Spanish attaché, Spanish and Portuguese officers, Spanish and Portuguese forces, Spanish citizens, minor sovereigns and princes of Europe, Leipzig citizens, women, Caroline, Princess of Wales, the Duchess of York, the Duchess of Richmond, the Duchess of Beaufort, Lady H. Dalrymple, Lady Delancey, Lady Charlotte Campbell, Lady Anne Hamilton, a young lady and her mother, Mrs. Delbiac, a colonel's wife, Mrs. Prescott, a captain's wife, other English ladies of note and rank, Madame Grassini, and other ladies of the opera, Madame Angiolini, a dancer, village women, soldiers' wives and sweethearts, a soldier's daughter, the Empress Marie Louise, the Empress of Austria, Maria Carolina of Naples, Queen Hortense, Letitia, Madame Bonaparte, the Princess Pauline, the Duchess of Montebello, the Countess of Montesquieu, the Countess of Brignole, other ladies-in-waiting on Marie-Louise, the ex-Empress Josephine, ladies-in-waiting on Josephine, another French lady, French market women, a Spanish lady, French and Spanish women of pleasure, continental citizens' wives, camp followers. Act first, scene at the banks of the Niemen, near Kauno. The foreground is a hillock on a broken upland, seen in evening twilight. On the left, further back, are the dusky forests of Wolkowski. On the right, is the vague shine of a large river. Emerging from the wood below the eminence, appears a shadowy amorphous thing in motion, the central or imperial column of Napoleon's Grand Army for the invasion of Russia, comprising the corps of Oudinot, Ney, and Davout, with the Imperial Guard. This, with the right and left columns, makes up the host of nearly half a million, all starting on their march to Moscow. While the rearmost regiments are arriving, Napoleon rides ahead with General Axel and one or two others to reconnoiter the river. Napoleon's horse stumbles and throws him. He picks himself up before he can be helped. Spirit of the years, to Napoleon, the portent is an ill one, Emperor. An ancient Roman would retire thereat. Napoleon, whose voice was that, jarring upon my thoughts so insolently? Axel and others, sire, we spoke no word. Napoleon, then, woe so spake, such portents I defy.
He remounts. When the reconnoiterers again came back to the foreground of the scene, the huge array of columns is standing quite still, in circles of companies, the captain of each in the middle with a paper in his hand. He reads from it a proclamation. They quiver emotionally, like leaves stirred by the wind. Napoleon and his staff reascend the hillock, and his own words as repeated to the ranks reach his ears, while he himself delivers the same address to those about him. Napoleon, soldiers, wild war is on the board again. The lifetime-long alliance Russia swore at Tilsit, for the English realm's undoing, is violate beyond refurbishment, and she intractable and unashamed. Russia is forced on by fatality. She cries her destiny must be outwrought, meaning at our expense. Does she then dream we are no more the men of Austerlitz, with nothing left of our old faithfulness? She offers us the choice of sword or shame. We have made that choice unhesitatingly. Then let us forthwith stride the Niemen flood, let us bear war into her great gaunt land, and spread our glory there as otherwhere, so that a stable peace shall stultify the evil seed-bearing that Russian wiles have nourished upon Europe's choked affairs these 50 years. The midsummer night darkens. They all make their bivouacs and sleep.
Spirit of the pities, something is tongued afar. Distant voice in the wind, the hostile hatchings of Napoleon's brain against our empire, long have harassed us, and mangled all our mild amenities. So, since the hunger for embranglement, that gnaws this man, has left us optionless, and hailed us recklessly to horrid war, we have promptly mustered our well-hardened hosts, and, counting on our call to the Most High, have forthwith set our puissance face to face against Napoleon's. Ranksmen, officers, defend your lives, your land, your liberty. I am with you. Heaven frowns on the aggressor. Spirit ironic, ha! El liberty is quaint, and pleases me, sounding from such a soil.
Midsummer day breaks, and the sun rises on the right, revealing the position clearly. The eminence overlooks for miles the river Niemen, now mirroring the morning rays. Across the river three temporary bridges have been thrown, and towards them the French masses streaming out of the forest descend in three columns. They sing, shout, fling their shakos in the air, and repeat words from the proclamation, their steel and brass flashing in the sun. They narrow their columns as they gain the three bridges, and begin to cross horse, foot, and artillery. Napoleon has come from the tent in which he has passed the night to the high ground in front, where he stands watching through his glass the committal of his army to the enterprise. Davout, Ney, Murat, Oudinot, Generals Axel and Ebel, Narbonne, and others surround him. It is a day of drowsing heat, and the emperor draws a deep breath as he shifts his weight from one puffed cap to the other. The light cavalry, the foot, the artillery having passed, the heavy horse now crosses, their glitter outshining the ripples on the stream. A messenger enters. Napoleon reads papers that are brought, and frowns.
Napoleon. Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.